is Sanderson wrong about Journey Before Destination?
The finale really did spoil a lot of my enjoyment for the Cosmere overall.
What emotionally does Sanderson do unlike any other? He gives you the highest highs you can really get in a book. The first half of Stormlight books are usually the basically books 1 through 14 of Wheel of Time. You know, the slog?
Mm-hmm.
had to keep you on your toes. Welcome back to another Tudor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm your other host, Richard.
Today is the day we are talking Stormlight Archive, the full book 1 through 5 series review. We can finally do this. We can look as if we are the gods themselves in the world. We are the Odiums. Now, we are the honor.
Now, is it fair to even call 1 through 5 full series?
Full arc 1. Books 1 through 5.
Is it even really an ending?
Question mark. He's giving a visual question mark, yes.
Question mark. We will discuss in comparison of end of era 1 of Stormlight Archive mm-hmm. versus the end of era 1 of, say, Mistborn. And how those endings differ.
Yes.
We will discuss. Not spoilers, really, but just in comparison to his other works.
We will be spoiling, so, Stormlight Archive. If you have not read, so we'll give like a couple minutes here if you're here and haven't read Stormlight Archive. I want to give you a chance, Rich,
mm-hmm.
to tell that person, say to that person, should they read this book 1 through 5? Should they read Stormlight? Brief spoiler free for if somebody doesn't know and just wants to get into it. They're thick books.
Yeah.
380,000 words in book 1. By book 5, it goes all the way to just under 500,000 words. So if someone out there is going, should they read the series, what do you say to them?
There's one caveat. Before book 5, I would have said, whether you're a slow or fast reader, read the Stormlight Archive. I think it's worth it. We have a couple friends that they're fairly slow readers where Stormlight Archive, that's their year of reading. That's all they're doing for the whole year. After book 5, I would say if you're a very slow reader, read something else. If you're a fast reader or relatively moderately paced, like you can read The Way of Kings in 2-3 weeks type of deal, go ahead. Read the Stormlight Archive. If it takes you slower than that, I wouldn't really recommend it anymore.
Hmm.
The length does matter.
And so for full awareness here, so Rich and I, we're going to give our overall scores for each book. We're not going to go each book like ratings like we usually do. Then we'll talk the 6 categories going emotional impact, the characters, the plot, all this as a series overview of what we think Sanderson's pros and cons are for each of these. Why is Stormlight sometimes the best, and then what is the worst?
What does it fall short at?
Where does it fall short? And so we're gonna dip into that. And do you want to start off just as an overview for the series? What are you left with? What taste is left in your mouth when you think back to Stormlight now? Because this has been massive for our channel, where not just as readers, I shouldn't say just channel, because Way of Kings got us both back into reading as adults. So what does it mean to you outside of just recommending the books?
I still have very fond memories of the series overall and what this series has done for me personally, of getting me interested into this hobby and passion of mine.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be such an avid reader without Sanderson, without the Way of Kings. But after Wind and Truth, it does put a sour taste in my mouth. Almost one of the first things out of my mouth when I was talking about this book with people around was, I don't want to read another Sanderson book for at least a year. I got to give some space. I am done for a while. I'll eventually get back to it. I'll pick up Sanderson's books eventually, but it's no longer a priority on my list. The finale really did spoil a lot of my enjoyment for the Cosmere overall, even though I will have positives to say on where the series could go, depending on maybe Sanderson taking some time to analyze everything he did in the fifth book, because with how contentious it is, I don't think he can completely dismiss it. You know what I mean?
Well, because you gave a review, he's going to see it.
Of course,
you,
yeah.
You gave it a 1.75, so Sanderson's going to start rewriting right away, sir. But you are right. This is the first time I've seen a Sanderson book ever drop. Maybe Rhythm of War, this happened a little bit.
Yeah.
But this significantly, where the, I shouldn't say backlash, the reaction to his book 5 release was very split and divisive between the fandom. Usually, Sanderson releases a book, 5 stars, 4.5 stars, people are loving it. And if you give criticism
was all on the outside.
It's usually not people in the fandom. It's usually people going, they're not Sanderson fans to begin with. They're people that are going, well, Sanderson's pros. And this, you ever see that article we reviewed, Brandon Sanderson is Your God?
Yeah.
By that guy, just not a Sanderson fan. Sees people that loves his characters and worlds and goes, I don't like, look at this stupid line he wrote, blah, blah, blah. But now for the first time, you're seeing booktubers, fans, genuinely, this is their series.
Yeah.
Complaining. And those are the people you can't ignore.
Yeah. So we'll talk about maybe why that's kind of happening personally. Like, you know, a part of this topic that we're going to be discussing is what is the audience that Sanderson's trying to reach? I think as the series has progressed, he has tried to broaden the audience. I think Mike's Book Reviews makes a really good point of it trending toward a more YA style and tone as the books continued on, mainly in book 4 and 5, and book 5 was the most noticeable. Is that tone and going to continue? Is that going to be the rest? Is that going to be Sanderson's style? And that's what we're going to expect for book 6. If that's the case, I'm probably out. Who knows? Maybe he will make some adjustments.
I have to say, with all this negativity, I mean, I have similar thoughts book 5 with you, but the way the series sits with me, when I think books 1 through 3, I'll give you my quick ratings of the books. Mm-hmm. Book Way of Kings, Words of Radiance, Oathbringer, books 1 through 3 are all 5-star books for me. Like, floored me. Read it. Your life depends on it. Rhythm of War, I think it's really good, but I had my problems with it. 3.75 stars for The Rhythm of War. Then book 5, we had a recent review if you want to check that out on our channel. We've reviewed all of these books on our channel, but I will give Wind and Truth 2.25 stars. I even lowered it a little bit since our review. So when looking at the series as a whole, like, we've reviewed every book. We reviewed Way of Kings twice. Massive Sanderson fan where I've...
We've given this man lots of our money, time, attention. The
thing is, rightfully so, because yeah. I would... He's always paid off. He's not just that. He's outside of writing. He's a great businessman, but I don't mean that. Just he's good at selling things, but he gives back to the community.
He's generally what you want a businessman to be like. Of
yeah,
actually serving your audience and trying to actually solve a problem in the space. So he does a great job at that. So.
He throws kick-ass conventions, but he gives writing advice in the lecture series you can check on YouTube. Amazing. We've sung his praises so many times here, but mainly sing his praises because you wouldn't be doing this. Sure, you can be good at selling things, but what are you selling? And to me, he was selling my favorite books. Oathbringer, to me, will stick around as just... we're spoiling things now. So this is your chance. If you haven't read Stormlight, we will be spoiling books 1 through 5. This is a full series review, but I still look back Oathbringer of You Cannot Have My Pain and The Priceless Moment in Way of Kings and the duel scene. Honor is dead, but I'll see what I can do. These banger lines and these, which we'll talk about when we go through each category. But I even think back to Rhythm. Okay. But before I get ahead of myself, as much as I'm disappointed by the last book, it's such a now that we are Honor itself and can look at the series as a whole, it just leaves me with a bittersweet taste because I got so much sweets, but it ended bitterly.
Well, to let you know, like on my reread right before going to Dragonsteel, I liked The Way of Kings even more. That it stood up on a reread. That I think I had a interesting perspective going into the final book or the fifth book where I got to see, I was wondering before other people were asked, like you asked me of this style of prose, like, was I missing something when I was reading the other books? It didn't feel this way before. Mm-hmm. I think the modernization of the modern language, the character descriptions and the voices, they're so different. And I know them a lot better than I would have, because
you literally reread them.
Reread them a month before actually going and starting this book. Mm-hmm. The Way of Kings still holds up. I liked it even more. The character that I didn't particularly like as much when I first read it, Shallan, I liked a lot more on reread. Where it basically,
where are you in the series then? What star ratings would you give to the five?
Sure.
So we see where we're at.
First book, I am giving it like a 4.5. You know what? Fuck it. 4.75.
Okay.
I like it so much. It is arguably, like, I am on a good day, like on different days, I would argue it's my favorite out of the five. Yeah. But 4.75, mm-hmm, spectacular. And then Rhythm of War, Words of Radiance, yeah. 4.5. I think it's spectacular as well.
Okay.
Oathbringer, five stars. Yeah. Floored me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Loved it. There's so many moments that blew me away, that just such bittersweet, or just bitter moments that had to go down that way. Mm-hmm. The fact that we got two basically conclusions, like two
climaxes.
Huge climaxes, yeah, in the story. And the ending was just such an emotional ride that, mm-hmm, oof, I loved it from there. Then a little dip with me on Rhythm of War. It went up on the reread. Actually focused on some things that I probably missed out on the first one, and I liked it. I liked it actually quite a bit. We're giving it a 4.25.
Okay.
I could argue on maybe lowering that, but I thought it was really great. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed what the book was offering, and I'll have my criticisms for it. Book five, I have it at a 1.75.
I'm glad it didn't go lower. I thought
it's very flawed.
I thought you would have went lower today just to, like, keep going down that train. No.
I actually don't think I can put it any lower than that.
It has to be that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If anything, maybe I could give it a 2.
Right.
But I think the proper word is flawed, not disappointed. I don't think I'm just disappointed in the book. I think it's very flawed.
Mm-hmm. Which, our rating system, we have words associated with the numbers, so
yeah,
to that. Okay, so that we have similar thoughts. I'm a little bit more critical on Rhythm of War than you, and a little higher on Way of Kings and Words of Radiance, it seems. Mm-hmm. Because those, we definitely agree with Oathbringer, top dog right there. but yeah, Way of Kings sits so well. So, but before we get further, we're going to break down the entire series, going through our categories of emotion, characters. What is essentially Sanderson's biggest pros, his biggest cons? How does it sit with us? We'll have a quick break from our sponsor, Display.
Well, if there's one thing, Sanderson still is doing better than any other author right now, that's having amazing cinematic scenes in his books. And lucky for him, his fans are fantastic artists.
Check out these. If you are audio only right now and can't see, there are dozens and dozens of awesome prints on Display.com from our favorite scenes in the Stormlight archive, including the freaking duel.
Yeah. On Display.com, you can check out these prints and more from thousands of artists across the platform who design art from your favorite stories.
Displates, these are durable metal posters that you can stick on your wall with a simple magnet. It allows you to swap out displates. So from that small one Richard's holding to this larger one I'm holding, you just swap them with literally sticks on wall, take off, put that on wall. No nails, hammers, any of the sort required. They provide all the materials right to you, and it makes it super convenient for when you're like indecisive about, man, I'm feeling Stormlight today, feeling Wheel of Time tomorrow. Hopefully they never feel that, but you're feeling Stormlight.
Yeah, we use them throughout our house. I use it through my office as well. It looks great.
It does. And right now, if you use the code 2TORAMBLE, just our channel name, in checkout, you get 25% off for one display and 30% off for two or more displays. Again, that is code 2TORAMBLE at checkout. Thank you. We'll get back to the episode.
Thank you, Displate. Sponsor as always. They've been here for quite a minute.
Yeah, they have. I mean,
they've been here a little while.
And they didn't write a bad book that left us disappointed, did they?
Yeah, they haven't. They have not disappointed me with a novel yet.
I kind of like, in a way, before we get into the talking specific stuff, I do like that I have more substance now to talk about with Stormwhite. Because I think we talked, Rich and I talked about this off camera. I am more excited. Did we talk about this on video? No, I think it was off camera. I am more excited if we could ever interview Sanderson now. I am I am 20 times multitude more excited now to talk to Sanderson, because before reading Wind and Truth, I mean, look at me. I five stars for three of his books in the series. I love Warbreaker. I love Emperor's Soul. I think his novella, like, Dawn Shard, great book. Yeah, the fun time. I mean, my least favorite is probably Edge Dancer, but it's not bad. I'm like, oh, neat. I mean, now
I like Lift.
Wind and Truth is not my least favorite. But just to give perspective,
it's great.
I have, and his lecture series, I use that to help with my writing and everything. So when Sanderson would ever come on this podcast, as our that's our goal on the channel, I would just sit there, be super nervous, and go, "Hi, Sanderson, I love your books." And then I'd have nothing of substance to say. But now, if Sanderson ever comes on, which that's still our goal, you don't understand.
It's our goal, also it tends to be our trend of whenever
trashing a book and then
that we get the interview. Yeah,
I hope because I don't know if I said this off camera or not, but I'm more excited now because I have genuine questions to just pick his brain and go like, why'd you do this and this? But I, and also because I can give 20,000 words of praises, but then several pieces of criticism, which is a lot more interesting than just sitting there and nodding your head the whole time. I'm no longer a yes man to Sanderson. I'm a yes man, but you see,
basically, you were crawling at his feet and now you finally looked up and you're getting off the floor. You finally get to shake his hand.
No, no, because you're still kicking me.
Oh, yeah. So I'm kicking you into the ground.
Hence the arm brace, you know.
Yeah.
So
it's an abusive podcast relationship. Just so you know.
So do you want to start then with, as we're going through best and worst of Stormwind Archive, let's talk emotional impact. We're not going to give our ratings for each book in these categories, but just go
as a series.
As a series, what emotionally does Sanderson do unlike any other? I think I could start to say, he gives you the highest highs you can really get in a book. That's what he's known for, his Sander Lanches and those high, high climaxes.
Yeah, books 1-3 have some of the highest high moments that I remember reading books. I think now that I've read quite a bit more, I'm now starting to get other authors that reach those highs for me as well. But at the time when I was reading it, nothing came close, and he's still up there with the big dogs of just getting you that emotional outburst of cheering when Kaladin, you know, wins the day, when he finally stands back up to give it one more try, when Dalinar tells Odium, "You can't have my pain." Good.
Yes.
I am invested.
You have investiture.
However, throughout the series, I think this will be, this is one of the bigger points.
Yeah.
This carries across, I think, multiple of the categories.
Mm-hmm.
These books are long. And at least my thought on most books is you really have to earn a page count. The longer a book is, I will generally be a bit more critical because you have a lot of time to do stuff. You better actually do something with it. If you know, if your characters aren't, if I'm not super invested in your characters, but you only have a 300 page book, fair enough.
Yeah.
You only have 300 pages. You have over 1,000. I better care. I better care about them because that's a long time for me to not care.
Yeah.
And talk about this, the emotional impact. These moments are filled with a lot of like, okay, you know, like kind of interesting, maybe some lulls, pace of work. Come on, get to it. I remember when I first read Wave of Kings, I was counting the pages until the next Kaladin chapter.
Not on your reread as much.
Not though. On my reread, yeah. Because I actually liked Shallan on the reread in different context, but still, you're waiting for the big moments.
The bridge carry, the side bridge carry, that moment.
It's not all, you know, bing, bang, wow. So,
say that
which
again,
is bing, bang, wow. Yeah.
Okay.
If the ending lands for you on it,
mm-hmm.
a lot of slowness and flaws can be justified if the ending lands. The exception for me is like kind of Wind and Truth, where the ending sort of lands for me. Like I do like generally where it ended up, but I didn't like any of how we got there so much that it just I wasn't invested even by the end.
Don't you find that interesting that one of the themes of the series, Journey Before Destination, but so much of the books rely on that destination.
Yeah.
Nobody talks about Way of Kings. Yes, I get the destination there is still the journey of the lesson you learn, but nobody talks Way of Kings and Words of Radiance. And the first thing that they say is, do you remember that scene where they were walking through the Shattered Plains and then they walked over there and then...
Don't you just love that scene where Wit gives Kaladin a flute?
Actually...
And then he immediately throws it away?
Actually, the best Wit moment is with Kaladin in Book 4, where it's Rhythm of War, where the dog and the dragon scene, that's the highest high for me. Maybe the best chapter in Stormwind. I love that chapter. But you get the point of when people talk the books, they're going the Sandralanche portion. A lot of it does rely on that where does it end? You're exactly right to say... The criticism these books will get is if you're reading that long and the Sandralanche is like even good, even really good, that's not enough. Yeah. It has to knock your socks off, which for me, books 1, 2, and 3 knocked my socks off. Mm-hmm. And book 4 was like, oh, okay, good, still good enough. But why book 5 fell flat is if the destination makes logical sense, but doesn't, you don't feel that investment. You don't get that moment. It works for you.
It's not just that. Is that there were moments that should have landed, that on paper I should have been out loud cheering, but because the book I think was just poorly written and poorly handled up until that ending, that I didn't care. Mm. The fact that Dalinar's death goes past and I didn't care. I didn't care that Dalinar died. That's bad. That's bad. And being one of my favorite characters in fiction up until this point, and God, it's just disappointing as hell.
Which is where that emotion relies. So when Sanderson is going for something to make you feel, so much of it relies on the Sandralanche. What I guess are his moments. Mostly cheer moments, going like you're picking up the book, pumping your fist.
Oh, most of them are.
How many of the moments in Stormwind did you cry, for example?
Can't think of anything off the top of my head.
I can think of one because I love when a book makes me cry. But I think mostly what he's going for those Sandralanches is you're cheering, you're rooting for the characters. He gets you on board. Mm-hmm. You're there so long for the journey. You're invested in the journey, makes it so much worth it. The moment for me that I cried was that you cannot have my pain. And that sequence with Dalinar was both a cheer, a tear, a beer. No, I don't drink, but it just rhymed. A cheer and a tear for sure. And I would say for the most part though, he's not, Sanderson doesn't make me tear up other than that special moment for me. But he does have moments that would for people because talking about mental illness and his themes, which maybe we can transition into for want to go into thought, his messages and themes.
Sure.
In this. Because emotion, just to cap that off, Sandralanches, he's going for like big moments, hits with you. The flaw of that is if it doesn't land, a lot of the books won't work. So often you'll see people that go into Way of Kings left very disappointed because...
Yeah.
If it wasn't enough. But yeah, do you want to go thought-provoking messages, themes? What would you say overall Sanderson does with Stormwind?
Overall, as a series combined, I'd give it a 3.5. I think overall. It's good.
Okay. What do you think, what are you left with thinking about Stormwind as a, what he's trying to say?
You brought up some interesting points that I didn't think as much about before you talked about it.
From Wind and Truth,
this entire series we're talking about the ideals and oaths, promises, and man is flawed and so we must aspire to something greater, and that your mind is fallible. That's the whole point in these mental illnesses. Like, just because Kaladin feels a certain way doesn't mean he should act on it. He needs to trust something beyond himself, and in his moments of weakness, he can lean on his oaths. He can lean on these lessons he's learned, even if he doesn't believe it in the moment. You know, that's something interesting as we're going forward. It seems like the end of the series kind of does away with that. That a lot of it seems like, hey, just do what feels right. That's right thing is just what you feel is right. And that there is no right and wrong. It's just...
You see why my lowest rating for When the Truth was the theme? Like, it frustrated me.
Yeah.
Real bad. Again, it's when we're doing a full series review, I don't want... That's tough. Because
here's the thing. If that is the answer,
yeah,
that's a grimmer tone and like should be handled with a bit more...
Grimdark.
Gravity. Yeah, it should be a bit more grimdark. It shouldn't be happy as much as it is. It shouldn't be a cheerful moment.
It's tough because when reviewing the full series, I know how the last book ends. That's what the series leaves you with. So often you'll think of that's the message. That's the overall. Okay, that's what Stormlight is. How do you separate going like the themes from Oathbringer and Way of Kings, the ones that you probably loved? Mm-hmm. How do you separate those from overall? So you say it's good overall because you were disappointed again by the last book, but there were just so many good things. And the way he handles mental illness, for example, that's one of his big themes. How do you think he handles that in general?
And especially in the first three books, even in the fourth book, how he handles depression, I don't think is done with any degree of complexity, but I don't think it needs to. I think it's done simply well, of giving you those dark moments, and I think the very simple message. And I think it's powerful enough of Kaladin from the first book, Kaladin standing over the chasm, and going like, I've failed everyone. That my life is the worst it can ever be. Why try again? And Syl tells him, well, like, we kind of answered your question. You can't get any worse. Like, you said it yourself. They're already dead. What are you going to do? Fail and let them die again? Like, they're already going to die. Why don't you give it one more shot? And the idea of, hey, at your lowest moment, what else do you have to do? Then, like, you can't get worse. Why not try? Try again.
What do you have to lose?
What do you have to lose? Try it. That's generally good. That's generally, it's pretty simple. That's not a complex thought. But that's generally good advice.
I'd hope so.
And I think it's not just the good advice where, you know, Sanderson says, hey, if you're feeling sad, it could be worse. It can't be worse. Might as well try again. Like, he doesn't say it. It's handled in a great way for the character that you are cheering for him to walk back down, and you were invested in that message rather than Sanderson preaching at you.
Because, well, the character themselves, that's their flaw. They don't see that. Mm-hmm. That Kaladin book one doesn't see that life is worth living, and he's proven Syl helps him, and then Dalinar completes that first portion of his journey where Dalinar shows him that not all light eyes are what he thought they were, that even someone like Dalinar thought life is priceless. Yes, even Kaladin Dark Eyes' life is priceless. So the way he kind of handles the mental illness, and he has these arcs in each book, are all very thematically, except the last book, are all very thematically consistent and all draw to that very simple message, but just done and executed perfectly in that way. Like for me, when I'm left with Way of Kings, it's an example to me of looking of an example of looking at why life is beautiful and precious, and to not commit suicide. And then on top of that, there's cool little nuggets he has with Wit, and Wit talking about what novelty means in the epilogue. So he has these cool moments that I get other authors, and especially sci-fi, I mean, if we're talking Sun Eater, have messages more about humanity, and that will make it more ambiguous of, oh, is this right or is this right? More moral ambiguity to it. Mm-hmm. It's not ambiguous in these books. The message is clear, and he's going for, hey, this is what you should do. This is a good thing to do. But to me, Sanderson is the equivalent, and I mean this with the best, I mean this with all the praises, of like a Pixar film. Because in a Pixar film, WALL-E is a beautiful movie, fantastic message. Most Pixar movies are, at least from ones I've seen grown up with. But it's done so beautifully and with such tact. And Sanderson does that with Mental Illness and covers it, again, up to book five. Because then book five, where that falls apart, is where it's on the nose, preached at you, feels like the characters are not flawed, but they're like Wikipedia-ing constantly what the right thing to say and do is. So that's besides the point. But up to that point, that's what I get stuck with the themes of, yeah, simple, but they stick in my mind of, my God, the Rhythm of War, even chapter of the dog and the dragon and teaching Kaladin. And again, sorry to ramble on this. That's why I'm rambling podcast. But the
example of
what
Sanders has done even in that book compared to the next one.
This is so passive aggressive. It's not passive. It's directly aggressive.
It's directly aggressive.
What am I saying passive?
Kaladin is being bombarded by magical, you know, dreams designed to get him to kill himself.
Yeah.
And realizing that even when he has good days, he just can't help but be reminded of all the bad ones and that it's going to be worse. Mm-hmm. And how does he get up in the morning? How does he keep going when he knows it's, you know, Teft's going to die? You know, all of his friends and family is going to die. Like, how does he keep getting up when he knows the end is inevitable?
Mm-hmm.
And instead of Wit telling him, you have to have good thoughts to battle the bad thoughts, you just have to do that in your mind, and just like saying it.
How are you feeling?
Yeah. Wit tells him a story that is just a beautiful story about a dog doing all these amazing things to try to become a dragon, and ultimately
doesn't become a dragon.
Saves a boy, becomes part of the family, learns to speak, but considers themselves a failure because ultimately they didn't become a dragon. And the fact that Kaladin still doesn't get it. It was touching. It's not completely on. It's not exactly answering that question, but it's in a way Wit telling Kaladin, like, you keep pushing yourself to something that is impossible. And that you're not looking back on all the good that you've done. And that is one of the, you know, answers to it. It's like, think back on the people you've saved. Think back on all the good you've done. Like, you aren't, like, your mind is playing tricks on you. You aren't the worst thing that has ever happened to your friends.
Yeah.
You've actually saved them. So that was a beautiful way to put it. Mm-hmm. It's done in a fun fantasy way.
And that example where, so Kaladin is overcoming that survivor's guilt, that depression he has, another portion of his depression, and Sanderson will end the books and have each one focused on an ideal for the most part. And so Kaladin's ideal in that book is to, I accept that there's those I'm not able to protect. Accepting the fact that even though he tries doesn't mean he's a failure, like the dog in the dragon story. So I also love how each book's encapsulated with it, an ideal he learns, and the ideals of the Knights Radiant of life before death, journey for destination, strength before weakness. Did I say that in the wrong order? You get the point. But the ideals and each lesson that's learned, even from, I think Kaladin's are the best ideals throughout the book.
Generally
speaking, but then Dalinar has amazing one in Oathbringer, and
They have generally good oaths. With Shallan, it's more just truths. It's not oaths.
I mean, you know who had the best oath of all of them? Do you remember? Teft.
Ah.
In just one little chapter.
You want to talk about emotional moment?
Just slid in there saying, I will protect those I hate, even if that's myself. I'll protect the ones that I hate the most, even if that's myself. But just saying how
he
didn't even have he didn't have a bunch of point of view chapters in Oathbringer, but just throws that and lays it on you, and you understand him and you feel for him.
It's, you know, not just thrown and stapled on at the 11th hour. It was well set up for several books of his addiction and how much that actually, it not just destroyed his life, but is now starting to destroy his new family around him. He's gotten his friends killed because of it. It's powerful, powerful stuff.
So when you look at Stormlight then, and for me, has those individual books have phenomenal messages and themes, but then you're right, at the end of the series, turns those, that was my biggest complaint.
You want to give a positive note for book five? Yeah. I'm remembering from book one, Way of Kings, and Yasna trying to teach Shallan a lesson of, you know, Yasna going out to the middle of the street, deliberately enticing robbers.
Yep.
And then just goes out of her way to kill a bunch of thieves and, you know, street thugs in brutal fashion to teach Shallan a lesson of, like, basically, this is, you know, this is what we are. We have a responsibility. It, you know, the ends justify the means. Like, look at what I've done. And but what's the moral weight of it? And basically, Yasna's way of, like, how callous she is toward human life, and ultimately nothing will stop her and for getting what she wants. That is the highest good, is whatever she thinks is right. And we went for so many books of everyone like, oh yeah, Yasna, she's just the smartest. She's the smartest. She's the best. And then you go like, what has she actually done? Like, she's been here for a lot of books.
Yeah.
She's known, like, oh yeah, she was the first Radiant, or first known-ish, technically, kind of, not really.
Early.
She was the first.
She was a beta reader.
She's a beta reader. She was the first fourth ideal Radiant. What did she do? Nothing. As far as I remember.
She became queen of Lethgar.
She became queen.
Got with wit.
The big thing, but with then
Yasna, yeah.
Book five, showing the flaws of basically utilitarianism.
She's the best character in book five to me. I mean, from our whole review of that, I'm left with thinking very fondly of Yasna, and her messaging and her flaw as a character is what makes it compelling, because she still had a lesson to learn.
She had a lesson to learn, but also there was just real conflict with her ideals, with people around her.
Yeah. So I think with her point there, but how do you see his message about utilitarianism and the greater good as a series then? Because he focused on that, ideals and the greater good. And Odium's argument was that the greater good, Yasna, is just the greater good to yourself. And that was her character flaw. But then Odium was also trying to get her into a philosophical corner of saying, well, the greater good, you would have to, the person with the more knowledge, if you have more knowledge about the universe, you know more factors that would lead to the greater good. So kind of putting Yasna in that utilitarian trap of, well, if you believe in the greater good, wouldn't you have to delegate that to somebody who knows more than you, because they know more of the greater good than you do? So if you're a utilitarian, you just have to go up the ladder to whoever is the most knowledgeable. You just have to defer to somebody higher than you. So you can't be a true I love that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really like that.
Yeah.
And but then at the same time, what does he say about the ideals, and that what does it leave you with there?
Hey, ultimately he doesn't really answer the question here, which, fair enough, I guess it's book five in a 10-book series, and who really has the answers to these other than, you know, Divinity, I guess. That's basically it. We are trapped in a universe, in a system, in a reality that either morals are subjective and we're all that we're making it, or it is objective and there is a higher power that it says what right and wrong is. Those are the two options. Like, it's either objective or we're all we got. And how is, with the world that Sanderson has set up, it really is subject, like, the fact that there are higher powers, but the higher powers are just mortals with godly power. It's not really the same thing. Like, from Odium's standpoint, yeah, why shouldn't he be the one that says what's right and wrong?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing higher than him. There's no greater authority than God. He became God. What other authority is there to judge right and wrong?
He is the stopping point.
it's either that or we're all subjective and we all just figure out what right and wrong is for ourselves. Whatever feels good in the moment.
And that seems to be the answer that he gives. And that was where it left really sour taste in my mouth with the ending theme of Stormlight is Dalinar says, and Adolin's storyline, Zeth and Kaladin's storyline all align to, hey, it's not just about the oath itself. It's about believing in the oath truly. Like, it's not just here is oath. Do you have conviction behind that oath? But the answer that Sanderson provides is ideals are higher than the oath itself. Promises over oaths, which can just be interchangeable, like promise, oath. Again, don't make an oath, a vow should be held to highest regard, especially you're making that vow and oath with the full intent that you will follow it and you believe it. And sometimes oaths are something that you don't believe in, but you have to come to, like Kaladin, like every single story in here, you have to come to realize the oath is something that you need to learn.
You're supposed to trust your brightest mind. Honestly, a lesson Taravangian has to go through of when he's smart, when he trusts his plan. The idea of when you have emotional enlightenment and you come to a decision with clear conscience, with clarity of this is what's right. You hold, like an oath is holds you to your best self. That's the ideal of it. At your best, that's when you make an oath. And so when you're at your weakest, when you're at your lowest, and normally you're not your best self, you can lean on that oath. I'm doing it because of the oath, even though I don't feel it right now. When I was better, that's what I said I would do.
Zeth's answer for that is just follow a law.
Yeah.
Just and follow then, the thing.
Which... bad. And then what does he come up to at the very end? What's his...
follow the law I come up with.
No, I just follow laws that I choose for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, again, Sanderson's answer to this was the ideal over oath, but those ideals are inherently also stuff you just come up with. So, the message of the series I'm left with is you should follow an ideal that Sanderson agrees with. Which can work for can work thematically for a, hey, don't commit suicide. Like, hey, life is priceless is an ideal everyone can get behind. But again, when you get to the topics he's talking about and when the truth where it's more, it when it gets more a ambiguous, bunch
of the with, magic out of it.
Well, think about when he's talking about the more utilitarian aspects of, would you kill Gavinor? Would you kill one person for the greater good? When you're starting to talk about things more dicey of like the trolley problem and not just talk about, hey, live, don't commit suicide and accept pain in your past, which are things 99% of the population can get behind. When you start to bring in a little bit more of those dicey philosophical questions, it just leaves you with no answer. It leaves you back into Zeth's position that he's struggling with, because bring Zeth to the trolley problem and he'll have a conundrum again, because he has to come up with a solution, which I guess it's what he feels is right in the moment, instead of there being something greater to look at. So he just doesn't answer the ideal question. His answer is just unsatisfactory do what you think is right.
Yeah, it's basically a ton of setup for... and then...
to throw away the oaths.
To basically, oh, here's the answer, and Zeth is now good. You know, Zeth is now mentally healed. And it's like... Zeth is in the exact same place that he was.
Yeah.
Like when he was a child.
The only difference, instead of...
now he's comfortable with just following what he feels. But he ultimately is in the same place. I'm just going to follow laws that I feel are good. All right. Kind of a lame answer to give at the end of it, but fine.
So, again, a lot of mixed feelings because, again, highest highs I've had in some of these books, but left disappointed. Do you want to go into plot?
Yeah.
Okay. How do you think he handles pacing and his plots in general?
Overall,
yeah,
the Sandor Lanches are great. Love most of the endings. Awesome. He doesn't need to have them this be this long. He can make them a lot tighter. I think he could, but chooses not to, and I think that carries on book to book, and it gets worse book to book.
There's been a lot of talk about his
even in Oathbringer.
Editor,
I love Oathbringer.
Yeah,
but Did it need to be that long? Probably not. You could cut that down.
Most people's complaints to our Oathbringer that first half of it being much slower. A lot of his first halves are slower in setup. And he said by book five, his editor was Moash.
I think.
Surprisingly close to Moash.
Yeah.
Was he throwing his editor under the bus? Moash. He said the books had to get longer because there's more story to tell and it builds up the more epic scope, it's harder to reduce it. That's one thing that he was explaining. Also, on that hand, he did admit that this one took him just as long as other books did to edit. So he said it wasn't really a problem as far as that he didn't look it through, didn't edit it more. It's not like he doesn't do that. Do you think he's in the Stephen King position where whatever he writes and puts out as a draft, there's nobody there that can really tell him to cut it, that can go, hey, reduce this, do this, because he's so successful that whatever he's writing is going to sell a ton of copies. So just let the author who is proven and the master at this, let him do his thing, which could also lead to cracks.
I mean, it's possible. I'm not sure. It definitely feels that way. I don't know when he started doing it, but I know, I at the very least know it happened with Wind and Truth.
Yeah.
That one of the editors, like the editing, because he does have a lot of edit. He has beta readers. He has editor. For this book at least, I think he had it on a previous book, but I don't remember. You can correct me down comments and everywhere, but had sensitivity writers go through the book and making sure that he's, dotting his I's, crossing his T's, and like, hey, make sure you represent this person and do that. To me, when I heard like, oh, sensitivity writers, like sensitivity editors, that's not he didn't edit enough. That's just you're trying to please everyone, and ultimately you're trying to cast too wide of a net of, you don't want to step on anybody's toes. If that's kind of in your mind, I'm generally going to think it's probably going to lead to a bad product.
I don't know if that changed for later books or having that in earlier books too, because just in general, Sanderson, when he writes and he's pacing these books, we're not talking as prose really right now, just for plot and pacing. Yeah. It doesn't seem like even from book one that he's the most fast-paced writer to begin with.
No.
So it's something else to do with, I don't know what it is actually, but yeah, it's something changed in from books one through three, like noticing it in four and going into five. What do you think that's part of what it was? Like what were the factors? Because I know he still had that editor in book four, if I'm not mistaken. And then...
Well, no, I don't think he did.
He didn't in book four?
No, I don't think he did.
No? Oh, dang.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, but okay, so then when just looking at it in general, so the first half of Stormlight books are usually the basically books 1 through 14 of Wheel of Time. You know, the slog?
Mm-hmm.
had to keep you on your toes.
I know, you're trying.
So the first half of Stormlight, people will say, is more of the just let it pay off. When people recommend Way of Kings, they go, hey, buddy, read this really thick book. And the person's struggling and going, I'm halfway through, nothing's happening. Some people will say that. Honestly, my first dive into it, I was invested by the chasm scene of Kaladin looking off into the chasm. But beyond that, I was still struggling with Shallan stuff. I'm going halfway through. Mind you, still ended up being a 5-star book, but I had to push through to finish Way of Kings. Especially, I was just getting back into reading. So when people are recommending, hey, take this book, but then you'll always hear your friend that recommends it go, you just got to just get to the end. Just get to page 1100. Just finish book one. Hey, you don't like book one? Words of Radiance is rated a 4.74. Yeah. Words of Radiance is the best book in the series. Just finish book two. How much do you hear that with the series because of the pacing?
So much. We're for dedicated fantasy fans and readers who are willing to give, a grace book, which wild to me. But that's actually how I think. Like, I'm now reading books with the expectation of like, give them one book. The first book doesn't have to be that great. I'll continue reading on. We'll find out. Mm-hmm. And they'll probably improve. But a whole book of just got to get started. you compare that to something like Andy Weir, mm-hmm. of he tells just a really tight narrative in the first page. I'm invested in his character. Done. And he tells a compelling story in, you know, pull The Martian off the book for right off there for me. Like, I want to know how many pages that is exactly. It is. Oh. 369 pages.
This one's 1,329.
369 pages. He tells a full, complete story with characters that I care about, yeah. with a plot that is just tight, where I'm interested. Every single page, every single chapter, I'm invested. And I'm super involved in a world that I think is so real. Also because it's mostly the real world. But everything else
about it. Could you pull that off the shelf behind you? See Babel? Go two books to the right of Babel. See that one? To the left of, yep, that one right there.
Now, but this is the point. When I said in the beginning of the video, is you kind of have to earn it.
Yeah.
That you'd run a risk at running a chonker book. It better be good. Like,
you're holding loads of dove, yeah.
I'm willing to waste some time.
Mm-hmm.
With something like Lonesome Dove, and what makes it special and unique is, I'm invested all the way through. I like every single. There was no slog for me. They were all invested. Sanderson's not exactly the same. And for me, Larry McMurtry has earned his page count.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think for nearly any of the Stormlight books that he's particularly earned that page count.
I would disagree somewhat, but agree somewhat as well. I'll disagree on the Sanderlanches, and those high highs are very hard to hit if you don't have that slow burn buildup. I do feel the pacing is more slow burn than it is boring.
Mm-hmm.
When the truth, again, it's tough to separate because, not to reiterate myself, book five, I did feel the ways I felt. But I did feel a slow burn, not this is boring and I don't want to stop reading. I never felt that. In the earlier books in Stormlight, I never felt that I wanted to stop reading. And the reason it earns that page count release to me is that big moment that it all pays off in the end. I look at the book, I'm so satisfied. Where you're correct is, it could be cut down. He's not the most efficient. Yeah, he's not efficient. Like, I think sure, Wave Kings could still be told, like, you could cut 10% off, probably, maybe 20.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how he writes. More so, I think that's, as far as plots go, the things that still blow my mind, like that Sadeus betrayal, because he had me going back and forth, believing Adolin, then believing Dalinar wasn't great, flipping back and forth in my head to actually believing Sadeus was a good person, because we saw him helping Gavilar in the first opening scene, and Dalinar knows he's a good man, and Adolin doesn't know what he's talking about. He had me switching back and forth, and then the actual betrayal by Sadeus took me by such surprise. I'm going, holy crap, I didn't see that coming. And Elokar's moment of built up through three books, some of the genius plotting he does with just the theme of Elokar in each book, why he sticks to me as a fantastic character, is book one, he's this paranoid king. Paranoid beyond belief, cuts his own straps just so people can investigate to see if there's anybody doing nefarious stuff because he's paranoid. He wants people to check on. He doesn't know what's going on. Okay, book two, he comes off of book one, this paranoid king that is disrespected in the end. People don't respect him, and Dalinar kicks him. He has that end scene with Dalinar. Book two comes, and he's just defeated, but doesn't take that in the typical king princely way of being vindictive about it, but Elokar then takes that and is ashamed but humbled by it and looks to Kaladin, a slave, Kaladin, who built himself up and was able to go from slavery to a hero of the land of Roshar, and Elokar goes to this slave for advice. That's how ashamed and humble he became. And then in book three, as he's having his eventual arc to a redemption is cut short, and you feel that perfect bittersweetness of what Elokar could have been, what was taken away from us, and what it leaves the story with. All I mean to say is Elokar's arc like that, or some of the slow burn that happens, it's tough to do if you don't sit with these characters, and the world he's building is a lot. I didn't understand everything I was reading in Way of Kings, like all the epigraphs, and I still probably don't. There's so much to it I don't get. So I think he earns his page count, while yes, a different writer could do similar with like 10 to 20% less. When in truth, 40% less.
Somewhat. I look at better.
I was hoping you'd end that with just somewhat, and that was your response to that whole ramble.
And well, we'll move on. Like, basically, I just kind of disagree with.
Yeah,
it can be really fun, but often it kind of niches you down to a certain type of reader that's willing to spend a lot of time that hopefully will get paid off. That not every moment is as tight as it really could be.
No, it's. I'm not saying it's tight. It's not tight.
Yeah.
I'm just calling it, like, you know, your real time books you love.
Well, no, though, but my point is you can have slower moments. You can have poignant character moments. You can have all these great things that build character and an intriguing plot and be tight. Tight doesn't mean rapid fire fast. It just means, oh, that's exactly what the book needed. It didn't need any less, no more, right on page. Like, great, fantastic. I think in general, my general thought on novels at this point is the longer you go, you better earn it. So like, it better wow me. It 1,300 pages but better.
That's what we're both saying, wow though. Me. Like, for me, it earned it for those books.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm agreeing with you. Some stuff could be cut, could be tighter, just because they're that long. I mean, Lonesome Dove book that you think is flawed, like I even think Lonesome Dove technically could be tighter. Now,
no, I don't think so.
Yeah, there's a "the" in there I'd cut.
Yeah.
But you could say that with any book, like it could be tighter. What I mean with the Sanderson books is if it pays off that well, and like if you do feel that Sanderson Lanch and that slow burn was worth it, generally speaking, I'm not gonna complain unless
unless the ending. The whole journey is boring.
Because, again, look at Kaladin's journey in Way of Kings, and we spent a lot of time with him and building up Bridge 4 and the characters and having him do the side bridge carry, succeed, fail, to the moment where he succeeded and failed so many times. Sure, you could have cut one of those out there, but then the ultimate... because I'd say, here's a con of Sanderson, because sometimes he... like in Rhythm of War, and Shallan's conclusion and her resolution was too quick, too rapid fire.
That
he has these moments where
that is the weirder thing is sometimes moments come out of nowhere where it feels too fast,
too rushed. Yeah,
that happens frequently. That's not just Shallan.
Yeah,
I think that's also Kaladin sometimes. Of
which area?
I'm thinking a lot of Book 4 of. Book 4 is drawn up, but like, again, Book 5 of he's great now. He's all better.
Book 5, I'm going to agree with you. Yeah.
But beyond that, there's. Yeah, a lot of plot moments and character moments come out of nowhere. Where I'm like, you want to drag this one out a little bit for me?
I think we are on the same page. Like, I agree, could be tighter. Like, 100%.
Fair enough.
I mean to say this, I go in with the expectation of it's epic fantasy. I think the genre, and he earned that right through all of these to be like long page count. And like, yeah, I'll let him cook. Let him do his thing. I know he's going to pay off. I always trusted him. So objectively could be tighter, but also I'm okay with it.
Fair enough.
But do you want to go on to, we went over characters.
We kind of already did, but let's give our rating for it anyway.
Well, what would you say the characters in general? Or did you want to give a rating to it?
Yeah, I think we've been given ratings for the rest.
I think we gave one rating, and it was... I don't know if we've been giving ratings for these.
I don't know. I would say now, after the finale...
Yeah.
3.75.
Okay.
Really good.
What would it be before the finale?
4.75.
Oh, my God. It's a hard life out there. Can I ask you this? Would you... Yeah. We talked about this briefly, but would you rather have a series where you're 4 books deep, or A Song of Ice and Fire, you're that far? Would you rather have the series not be finished or completed, or finish with a very bad, disappointing book?
Before Wind and Truth, I think would have easily said, oh, I want it just completed. Let's get it done and then talk about it. I'm now not so sure anymore. Maybe it'd been better if it just didn't end. We just stopped. Okay. Right. I do think I'd rather have a bad ending than no ending at all.
Well, sorry to get off track of the characters. What are you left with Stormlight characters?
I don't like the endings of particularly any of the characters. Someone like Kaladin, I think, ends up in a fine place, but it was kind of boring in that last book to get there. Not bad in your epilogue, but moving on from him. Shallan, I liked it up to Rhythm of War, but after that,
not so much.
Feels far more like a plot device. Like, why is she here? I don't particularly know. Doesn't seem like she had served much of a purpose. Where
hers was wider Cosmere.
You start going back through the rest of this, like, think back on her character, like, for what was the point of her character for the series. It's the Ghostbloods, her tying to the Ghostbloods. And is it her protecting Dalinar, protecting someone else from the Ghostbloods? No, it's protecting herself and her family from the Ghostbloods. But she's tied in with the wider cast, like, and then we get the ending we got. Yeah, that's a real letdown. That's a real letdown. I'm like, why is she here?
You know what I'm realizing?
So,
few things happen. There's Howling Darks, there's Red Risings out there that just get me so pumped. Mm-hmm. I don't like how I feel right now, Rich.
I'm not either.
I don't like how I feel, because I wanted this to end just kick-ass because I feel... I love this right here. I do. Why can't I keep talking about this?
Here's the thing.
Endings matter so much. Because it leaves... Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know what?
We talked about all these great characters where the possibilities of what could be.
Dalinar Cullen's my favorite character of all time up until...
up until he died, and I didn't care.
So here's what I'm thinking then. Is Sanderson wrong about Journey Before Destination?
I think he is.
I think the message is destination
fucking matters.
Way more than it the journey. Because look at us fucking negative Nancys. Just we can't. It's like a twitch. We're going like, look at, and then, well, until the end book, until the end of times. We're constantly weaving back into that because of obviously recency of we read it most recent, but also how else were we able to leave it with? It's why I don't ever rewatch Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones season 8 ended so abysmally that I can't even look at the characters the same. Now, this is not Game of Thrones season 8. I told you it's like Game of Thrones season 7.5 for me. That's what I did. Yeah. It's not that bad. It cannot be that bad.
Sure.
No, you're right. Toe fungus is not that bad. And it's getting real, like, it's red toe fungus.
No, I don't.
Weird. I was just kidding.
That seems like a you. That your body's weird as of now.
I can prove it.
You break easily.
I can prove I don't have to. I'll show my feet again.
Yeah, don't need to do that. That's for live streams only.
We do. If you ever catch our live streams, we always show our feet at the end. I'll go barefoot next time just to disprove this myth I created.
Yeah.
Okay, but with destinations matter so much.
Yeah.
Because I'm even left getting a little The one good thing about this destination, again, is I'm excited to talk to Sanderson. I really am. Because I'm more excited than ever because I have no nerves now when talking to him. And that just shows you, at one point, Sanderson was my god. That article was right.
It was correct.
That article was objectively like, yeah, of course he is. He's the fucking man. Now
he's who I worship.
Exactly. Now, he's gone from God to the Pope. Is that sacrilegious? I don't even know.
Yeah, a little bit. But also,
he's gone
God to higher man. You know, like, he's still such an impressive figure with so many books under his belt that are, kick ass.
Still got it.
He still got it, but he's immortal. He's a man again.
You'll see my switch up. Like, I'm a complete bandwagon. As soon as his next book comes out and I love it, I'm like, I was never a doubter. Wind and truth, more like
I want to bring up that seeing in the discussion of Wind and Truth and overall Sanderson's style of the Cosmere, and a lot of people's complaints are when the problems with Wind and Truth is it went down the same humor Like it copied the, it basically took Lyft's humor and then, yeah, let's talk pros.
Talk pros.
This is good.
Okay, pros.
Pros. Overall, some of the comments are talking about how Witted Truth sounds a lot more like Mistborn Era 2. And Mistborn Era 2 has this humor that's, you know, more witty and snap. Like, it's that witty, fast-paced kind of humor that some would call Marvel-type humor, but that's, you know, more seen as a derogatory statement. But you would say Lyft.
I would
Lyft
call it Marvel humor, yeah.
Yeah. Well, they're not completely wrong that Mistborn Era 2 does have a lot more witty, witty type humor. It is a bit more young adult style-wise and tonally. But the thing is, from the get-go, from that series, like the genre just fits it. You know? Of when you're reading a noir, like, it's not even a noir, it's, you know, industrial magic, you know, steampunky era. It you're getting a pulp mystery novel. Mm-hmm. The witty back and forth dialogue just works for the genre. It's supposed to be more fun. It's a bit more lighthearted.
Can we combine this with Suck Pros and world building? Because this goes hand in hand where
the
I think
pros
the complaint,
goes into the tone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because when you're talking about Mike's book reviews, he said it's getting a more YA feel, which he didn't expect and didn't want in Roshar. Mm-hmm. Why it feels like that and why I was justifying, again, agreed with you, it could be tighter, definitely. But why I go in with expectation, oh, it's epic fantasy. You can get away with 1300 pages if it's epic fantasy and it pays off. Whereas if I had a rom-com that was 1400 pages, absolutely not. Like maybe bar an exception, but just the genre itself doesn't lend itself to that long of a thing. So
it's actually a great example of like Lonesome Dove Western, being a Western. Westerns are not this long.
Except
they are generally like, mm-hmm. Oh, you're telling a Western story. Mm-hmm. That's a short,
shorter.
No, it's a pulp that, mm-hmm. Western used to be like the pulpy type novel. Yeah. This is almost, and it's a subversion of the genre of mm-hmm. like showing all the gritty details and making it kind of showing the boring parts mm-hmm. of the story, which makes it fun. But
yeah,
point being, yeah, it's subversive for the genre. Mm-hmm. This, in many ways, is also being kind of subversive for your epic fantasy of it's starting to make epic fantasy more young adult.
But that's the point with where the initial books 1 through 3, like I get his prose issue. He doesn't have the most flamboyant purple prose. I think it works great for the first several books. Where
I've now leaned more. It's serviceable.
That's
fine. Serviceable, but
yeah.
When he has a banger line, he has a banger line.
You're in good company. Most people think it's just fine. I think like Mistborn book one, his first trilogy is like, that's serviceable. Like that's okay. Mm. Good. This gives me he does the job well, I think for several books, but what he does in book five and starts to change with his prose, or my whole big point about this was the expectations he sets in Roshar and the world he set up for the tone is modern language. And that more YA feel doesn't feel right on Roshar and doesn't feel right in this epic fantasy. Whereas Mistborn, after skipping however many hundreds and whatever thousand years, how many?
Couple hundred years.
And the setting that it's in, plus the feel he gets you in right away, versus he starts you in Roshar with not that he's writing purple in Way of Kings, but even if I was to read off to you like a rant, the first page is, it's an iconic first line for Zeth. Let me make sure I get this right. Zeth son Volano, truthless of Shinovar, wore white on the day he was to kill a king. The white clothing was a Pershendi tradition foreign to him, but he did as his masters required and did not ask for an explanation. He sat in a large stone room baked by enormous fire pits that cast a garish light upon the revelers, causing beads of sweat to form on their skin as they danced and drank and yelled and sang and clapped. Some fell to the ground red-faced, the revelry too much for them, their stomachs proving to be inferior wineskins. They looked as if they were dead, at least until their friends carried them out to the feast hall to waiting beds. Zeth did not sway to the drums, drink the sapphire wine, or stand to dance. He sat on a bench at the back, a still servant in white robes. Few at the treaty signing celebration noticed him. He was just a servant and Shinri's easy to ignore. Most out here in the East thought Zeth's kind were docile and harmless. They were generally right. So even going with that, of that prose to me, again, that's the first line, so it's not like that the whole book, but even that gets you, that's not YA. That, to me, that feels more, it gets you in the epic fantasy feel, and by the end of the series, the prose does devolve into what Mike is saying, what you're saying, just more so modern language, YA feel, the quippy jokes, which aren't consistent to the jokes, that the sexual innuendos and that just throwing you off a bit, like, that's Roshar, like, what is this the same book? Yeah.
The word choice being far more modern language, where Sanderson has commented, like, hey, that is the point. It's the Rosharians, like, they are speaking their own language and it's being translated to English. Well, it being translated, it's going to be using our words because it's a translation, not fancy words. I find that explanation a little weak because he also said, oh, I compared this to things like Elantris or, you know, Warbreaker and things like that. I'm going, yeah, those are different series. Compare it to your own series.
Well, compare it to last book.
The previous book.
The previous book, he used the word courting, and in this, When the Truth, he used dating.
Yeah.
And in the previous books, like, he's now using terms like therapist and racist and get his ass or whatever. It was like, let's kick some fused ass. And these kind of lines that are just more so.
Syl, like Kaladin said, oh, that's Syl doing Syl things.
Yeah. So it's a shift in the prose for sure. And I don't know if that was, all that to say, it shifted in the book for sure.
Yeah.
Something changed there. And why it felt weird was, okay, it was prose plus world issue because the world immersion and you feeling as though you're left, this is Roshar, this is the real world, it kind of took you and gave it just a more modern feel, which for Mistborn Era 2 would work because it's a more modern book. Sci-fi.
It's not just a more modern book.
Yeah.
It's how you set it up.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's
exactly.
It's only a couple hundred years after first one.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have it, technology, culture only progressed a certain amount.
Right.
It could be more regressed, or it could be far more advanced, and the language can be completely, it depends on the first book. How'd you set it up?
Yeah.
He set it up a certain way, and it was consistent from book 4 to book, what was it, 7?
Yeah.
Right.
Seven right now.
Yeah. So book 4 to 7 was consistent. Like, the promise and was paid off.
Yep.
It didn't drastically change.
This is what culture. I signed up for.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Book 5, a little different.
Yes.
But talk about that. Combine this with the world. I think the world is incredibly well done in terms of physicality, of like actually visualizing a place and all of the neat little nuggets around the world that make it a great kind of like, honestly, it makes it a great tabletop game of all the players, all the pieces on the board are awesome. Now by book 5, I have gotten so much more of the culture, the background, the history of Roshar. And just because it's a lot, I'm left with still a little to be desired of, I know it's there, but I'm not as intrigued with it. So to me, that story is not as invested. So that's the aspect of world building I don't think Sanderson does the best. It's just not bad.
He's amazing when, I wouldn't say Stormlight specifically, but his magic systems are so more interesting in Mistborn and Allomancy for sure, and Hemalurgy and the third, which is, you're going to help me fill in that word right now.
Furukami.
Thank you.
Furukami?
Yeah, or Furuchemistry. You got me wrong.
The wrong way to say it is Furuchemistry.
Yes. We learned that from the video.
So, Furuchemistry.
But with even the way he explores the magic system or explores the flora, fauna, we've said this bunch too, but the geography, the shattered plains, very tabletop game. I like that description of, you can really visualize it. And what he does really well is even the concept of the storm and how the storm then affects the entire world, and that feels real. The Stormlight Archive,
the technical world builder,
and how that how that magic system necessary. Maybe the magic isn't the coolest of like, oh, you get to fly, but how it's ingrained in the economy, and then how you have to refill and use the storms, and how that affected how people built their societies, and how Carbranth is on the edge and I don't know the geographic term, but you get it. He described it better, but. All of that just feels so real because he uses one element and ingrains that in everything. Now, he doesn't necessarily have the culture depth of something like Wheel of Time. And right when you look at Roshar as a whole, you get tidbits about the Reshi Isles and the Western areas. But
something as the series evolved, that was more of my criticisms of book one and two of like, okay, hey, the magic is cool. I like the locations. Really awesome.
Yeah.
But what about Alethkar? Like, as far as I got, it's like, okay, it's surface level stuff of they're more violent, they're war nature, and they cover their hand. And, men and women, like, their gender differences were interesting. And those cultural differences were fun to see. Like it was something there. I kind of wanted more on why it felt like additions and like, yeah, it's us, but look at this difference. And then, okay, well, let's get more of the other cultures. And I wanted more of that. And we kind of got a tidbit in Oathbringer, but it was also, hey, they're people, but look, they're really bureaucratic.
Oh, like Alethkar? Not Alethkar, Azus. The Azir? Bit about Thalen.
I thought tidbits. There would be a bit more to it, other than like they really do just seem exactly as they are.
He got really focused on his macro the more it went. The god level threats, the Cosmere, and looking at not specifically Azir and how Azir functions, but it seemed like he was more concerned with building up the lore and background of big history points of Wind of Truth we saw, and we got hints throughout the series about the recreants, the hierarchy, or that I forget how you say the exact name of when the religion ruled, of Vornism, and these big moments
like,
in even history. Then,
like we got and, the why yeah. of the explanations, but none of the it didn't feel that way. So Vornism, I never bought it. I never like it. Vornism being the religion, like I didn't.
Oh, I get you.
It didn't feel like an actual real religion that was being practiced in Roshar. It was just an element there. It's a hard thing to describe of just because something is there in the book doesn't mean it is. It doesn't mean it feels real or.
Well, I think the part of it is why the storm feels real is how it's ingrained in the economies. All of it's affected by the storm. Vornism would be more ingrained for you if it did more than what it currently does. Like there's customs that are created by Vornism, but you wanted something deeper. You wanted something more.
We get Navani is supposed to be far more tied to Vornism, but it comes through as more just, she's, in the first book, she does a little prayer burning.
I think that you might like more. Again. Like, for example, Yasna's an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
What if the society there, like that was very much a taboo and a no-no, but she seems to kind of coast through being atheist with relative ease. It's not brought up. It's not like people are like, Yasna, the odd one in society. Something like that to give more depth to the consequences and like how do people treat religion? And there's tidbits of that, but
then there's also the aspect of that we kind of have to I think address with the world building. It's the fact that Alethkar had slaves throughout the entire series, like vast amounts of like slavery was a deep thing.
Yeah.
And it just kind of passed over. It only pops up its head when it's relevant to the story. You don't see none of our royalty have slaves. Dalinar doesn't own any slaves. The king
makes sense. Dalinar doesn't. Definitely does.
By way of kings, fine, but we're brought with all of our upper nobility, all of these characters, even who's the noble that Shallan eventually works with?
Sabariel.
Sabariel, like, he would. Doesn't seem to. It seems like slavery is only a thing when it, for Kaladin. Like, if you took Kaladin out, like, slavery is not a thing in the Lethgar at all. I wouldn't expect it to. The sensibilities of it. Is slavery just simply a class difference? Is it just the prisoners are slaves?
Some light eye, dark eye difference. And I think that ingrains more.
What is it exactly? And the fact that that's just, we can own, like, what do they mean by slavery? Because there is a difference in historical purposes. Like, but then we just move on from that.
One thing that's definitely true is only a couple years spans from the first book to the last book. But because the tech progresses and because Kaladin's arc in book one, I think from that priceless moment in book one and going forward, Sanderson focuses less on it because the society quickly progresses. The society quickly goes on to if the character's flaw is overcome, then it seems like the world also changes with the character.
But it's not a change. It's just suddenly different. You know what I mean?
Well, we're saying the same thing. Changed.
No. Changed, like, there's a gradual thing over time that you could see.
I didn't say gradual change. It's a change.
I want to just highlight difference between normally a change. You can see it happening.
Yeah.
It's just now different.
Right.
How did it get from A to B? I don't know.
But do you see that, like, with the, it seems like the character changes and the world changes to that character. Like,
maybe.
Is that an explanation for it? I'm just trying to look for, like, what?
Could be.
Why does it seem different? Because you said the slavery portion for Kaladin was so different. Book one, or like, that was existed for his character, but then afterwards isn't really.
It's not
an issue.
It's not mentioned. It never seems to be an issue with any character ever. No one ever mentions, like, oh, that's just a lowly slave, like, or like, oh, just get your slave to work. Like, it's not resisted. It's not, like,
maybe it's part of that because of the Parshendi and how Parshendis were slaves. And then, so that was a major portion about it, but then
that is more
because the Parshendis were seen as lesser. But then when in Words of Radiance, when the storm comes and changes everything. And so that completely flips slavery because literally the world changes. From Parshendis being the ones that do all the grunt work, and the bridge runners are there for humans to fight the Parshmen when the bridge run's not happening anymore. So I don't think it's that bad when it comes to...
It is said by Yasna and even Dalinar. Like, Dalinar was the one person, I think, that actually resisted, like, when, like, yeah, no, I'm not freeing all the slaves. That's not happening. Like, that amount of turmoil would destroy us.
No, I get it.
And it's clearly not... Their practice of slavery isn't just bridge runs and not just the Parshmen. They have a lot of slaves, and it's implied, at least, that it's deeply ingrained in the rest of their culture. But we don't see it. We don't get any characters that from it. Like, it seems such a important aspect of their culture that seems like Sanderson, like, wanted the Alethi to actually, like, be good and, like, oh, let's forget about that part. Everyone's great. Everyone's great now. Everyone has modern sensibilities now.
I'll agree with you on, like, the...
And they always have.
I'll agree with you on the sensibility part. I think just with... Because of the rapid change, like, the desolation's coming back, dark eyes can now become light eyes, and it breaks those barriers of the racism in this world was light eye, dark eye. That shifts. Parshendi are now fighting you. And they're part of the fuse shifts. So, like, literally the people who were slaves can no longer just be slaves because anybody could have a power. By the fifth book, I mean, everybody and their mother is a Radiant. Mm-hmm. So I think it's because of that. There's the world explanation for it. I will agree with you on the difference in book five. I just don't, like, I think Roshar, at least the focus for his world building, isn't necessarily on the things you're looking for. Because... Roshar isn't meant to be like, let's look at this one cultural aspect and dive deep into Aesir. And there, it's more so, I think, what you get from Stormlight.
That. It's that it does seem to be a focus. It should be important. And then it's not.
Well, I was just explaining why, because of the world changing. So that's why it changes. But I think the whole Rosharian system, it's more so he goes for not Shattered Plains, the Shadesmar Spiritual Realm, which I don't like Spiritual Realm when we get to that, but the realms and godlike powers and Cosmere implications, and then what he kind of does is he's bringing this wide macro scope, connecting it to the other books, but then Roshar specifically is... Oh, you got a call?
No.
Okay, we're Oh yeah, we have a collab that we have to join. So this episode's got to we have to cut an episode off short. How long do we run?
A while.
Oh God,
we expected 40 minutes.
We thought this would be 40 minutes because you know what? What is the conclusion of this whole Stormlight talk, Rich?
I guess I'm still too bitter after book five. Give me 6 months to a year for me to talk about it again, and we'll see if I've softened on the series.
If you guys want a part two of this, we're not giving it to you.
Yeah.
This was
I very much hope to not have another Stormlight video for a long time.
Yeah, you know, I like being happy.
Yeah.
I like that. Just optimistic, let's go spirit.
I don't think any Stormlight video, like dedicated Stormlight video, just us talk about it, is going to be anything positive for a while now.
Because that's left in our heads. Yeah.
So move on to bigger and better things.
Well, I hope you all had a delightful time listening. We're very confused, right? Not confused. We know what's going on. It's just we are
sad.
But I'm also happy
that it ended.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, all.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get two free on 12 packs of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. And we've lowered prices. You can save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas Mini Bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.